the Broadway Hour.
This is Stuart Klein. Stay tuned for an hour of live music and very live conversation all about the theater. With us tonight, the one and only Carol Channing. Cabaret and recording star K.T. Sullivan will be singing live. And Emmy winner Kim Zimmer of The Guiding Light, now starring in the comedy Four Dogs and a Bone. And you'll have a chance to win some free theater tickets in our trivia contest. And there she is.
Harry, well, hello. Louie, it's so nice to be back home where I belong.
The actress you hear singing is one of the legendary performers of the American Musical Theater. She was Lorelei Lee in Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, and she created the role of Dolly Levi in Hello, Dolly. It's a real treat for me to introduce Miss Carol Channing. Yes. Carol, it's a delight to see you back in town.
Oh, thank you. It's a treat for me to meet you. And
hello.
Hello.
What brings you back to New York, Carol?
Well, I just got here within 4 minutes flat of rehearsal. I just left rehearsal on Hello, Dolly. We're touring the world.
This is actually going to happen. You're touring again with Hello, Dolly.
Yes, and first we'll tour the United States, and then we will go to... What happened, what started the whole thing is the government of China, Beijing, felt that Hello, Dolly was the most typically American musical comedy. And you know, the more I work on it, I think the Chinese are right. And to pick it up again, Stuart, so we thought, why build Jerry Herman as the overall artistic director and Leroy Reams is directing? And he said, be sure to say, give his very best to you.
Good old Leroy. We go way back to 42nd Street and before.
Oh, yes. Well, that's not so far back as far as I'm concerned.
Well, speaking of going back, Carol, let's begin at the beginning.
Yes.
Where are you from? Where were you born and raised?
San Francisco. And, my high school, Lowell High School,
Yes. The
finest high school in San Francisco. I worked hard to keep my grades up so I could go to Lowell. It had only the highest grades. Well, they changed the school auditorium's name to the Carol Channing Theater. I'm so proud that I have to tell anybody that will listen.
The Carol Channing School Auditorium?
Yeah. Well, yes. That's right. The principal said, actually, it's no great feat. We had no choice. You were the only student who never got off the stage. And it's not the same principal now, of course, but it went down in the annals, and they said, you have to give it to her.
Well, that's good enough for me.
Yeah.
Carol, when did you first know that you wanted to be an actress?
In the fourth grade in San Francisco. It was my first time on a stage, in the school auditorium stage, and somebody nominated me for secretary of the student body. And the procedure was, we were all sitting in the school auditorium, to get up on the stage, accept the nomination, and tell your fellow students why they should vote for you. So this dear Bobby Schmaltz nominated me.
Bobby Schmaltz?
Yes. And every time I go to San Francisco, I telephone him and I say, hello, Bobby. And he doesn't know what's the matter with me. I want to thank him for what he did for me.
Has anything been named for Bobby Schmaltz?
No, but he should be a William Morris agent, really. But he nominated me. I got up on the stage, and naturally, I couldn't think of one reason why they should vote for me. So I, being an only child, and I understand most only children do that, imitated the teachers. I mean, you talk like whoever wonderful you met that day. So I did the principal, Miss Berard. And I said, go to the polls and vote for Carol. She was sort of a forerunner of Julia Child. And they all recognized her, and they laughed. And I thought... Then I did Mr. Schwartz, the chemistry teacher who blew up the chemistry class on an average of once a term. And they laughed. And do you know... I stood there and I thought, what I laugh at, that's what everybody else laughs at. We're all alike. We go toward the same things, away from the same things. We're exactly alike, and I suddenly realized I'm no longer an only child. I was 7 years old when I realized
that.
I did everybody I could, and I got off the stage, and I hid behind the school coats that are still there, the cloakroom. I hid behind them, and I thought, oh, God, I'll do anything to get back on that stage again, to have that safe, warm feeling with the audience, you know. And I told my father about it that night.
And what did he say?
And he was my confidant, and he said, he listened to the whole thing. I said, Daddy, something tremendous happened to me today. And I told him about it, and he said, you know, there's an adage that says, be careful what you set your heart upon, for you shall surely get it. And I said, you mean I can dedicate my life right now? He said, you can dedicate your life when you're 90 years old. If you know what it is you want to do, it's never too late. And at 7 years old, I said, I'll crawl across the desert without water. I'll go without food. I'll do anything. I have to be back there. Well, naturally, I won the election. I got to read the minutes every Friday, and I lived for Fridays. And it's the greatest experience in the world. Nobody much cared whether they were accurate as long as they were entertaining. And I read them like everybody that made a motion. And I learned from that time I was 7 years old. And children aren't courteous. They let you know it's not funny.
Right.
They let you know that your mind is not concentrated. And I had three shows to do because we couldn't fit all the students in. By the first show wasn't very good. The second show I was beginning to time it better. I realized I didn't set it up well enough. And by the third show, I was
killing
swinging.
Him in the aisles.
You bet. And that's when I learned to like long runs.
Carol, was there any history of performance in your family? Your parents?
No, not at all. My father was a Christian Science lecturer, teacher, editor. He was an editor-in-chief of all the Christian Science publications. And my mother was a practitioner. And there was no history of it.
Now, I think you went to, I don't know if you studied drama, but I know you went to Bennington College.
Yes, it was the only college at the time where you could major in the arts, so I was able to major. I was a drama dance major. I keep telling people I would have been a drama dance major, but the drama teacher came from New England, and the dance teacher came from the Middle West.
And how long did you stick at Bennington?
Oh, 3 years. The third year, Bennington has a winter period where you go out and get a job at whatever you're majoring in.
Okay.
And so I went, I was there with the Katharine Hepburn's two younger sisters, Peggy and, anyway, the two girls, Peggy was a science, they were science majors, so they went to Panama to look at bugs. And during their, Puff Harriman was there, Avril Harriman's daughter.
Uh-huh.
So she went to Washington to pick at the White House while her father was in office, which is what you do when you're 18 years old.
And you went.
And I went to the William Morris office, which I thought was the biggest one at the time. I guess it still is. And asked to speak with the president, Abe Lastfogle.
Uh-huh.
And I did an audition. And I was sitting there next to Alfred Drake, who was unheard of at the time, and Betty Comden and Adolph Green. We were all sitting together on a bench. And at Lastfogle, the president, his secretary came out and said, you, and I didn't have my glasses on, so I looked. And Betty said, she pointed to you. I said, no, she didn't, Betty, she pointed to you. She said, no, go in there. So I went in, I had this little drum, and I wanted to do what the girls at Bennington just loved.
Medea.
No, it was like that. You're so right, Stuart Klein. It was the Orestes funeral chant.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
With a drum.
Huh?
With a drum.
With a drum. It was a 9/5 time. In those days, in those days, they had things in nine, and it was very difficult. This is 9/5 time. Isn't that difficult with this drum? Well, Lastfogle sat there chewing on his cigar, and I went, Premier, le massacre des enfants et la mère douleur qui est. Ouh, je claire. Well, he thought it would be He felt that I should do someone a little better known than Orestes, like Sophie Tucker. So I sensed that I was losing the man's attention, so I said, "No, wait, Mr. Lastfogle. I have another song here that that the girls at Bennington just love. It's a Haitian corn grinding song rendered by the natives as they stomp out the kernels with their feet. They sing of their lost youth and pray for rain. Well, Mr. Lastfogle thought he could see some signs of improvement. And finally, and then as he was ushering me to the door and telling me not to phone him, he would phone me. I said, "No, wait, Mr. Lester, I have one more song here I ran across in my studies on Mitteleuropean cultures." And before he could close the door in my face, I sang it. He said, "Wait a minute, I'm beginning to see a glimmer of talent in this girl." He said, "My grandmother used to sing songs like this
to
me."
That's Romania, Romania.
That's right.
Right.
Exactly. And he said she sang songs like that. And, you know, Abe Lastfogle and I sang that song together. And he sent me over. And he was my agent all my life. He sent me to Mark Blitzstein, who was writing modern American operas. And they had one comedy relief song, "I'm Simply Fraught About You." I got the job, my first job on Broadway, and that's how I got into the theater.
The further adventures of Carol Channing after this. We're back on the Broadway Hour on AM 93 WPAT. I'm Stuart Klein, and with me is the one and only Carol Channing, who had the entire lobby in stitches. Carol, I think your first Broadway break came as the Gladiola girl in Lendenier. Remind our audience what the Gladiola girl was.
Well, actually, first I did the Mark Blitzstein opera.
Okay.
And he wrote, you know, Cradle Will Rock and all that.
Right.
Well, then you think you're on your way. And that's the trouble. It's the next job and the next job. So I finally had to go home back to... Well, I talked it over with my parents about... and the faculty of Bennington. And this was, and I told them that I would... my parents said, "Well, you can always get your education, but you can't... You can always get experience, but you can't always get your education."
Okay.
So everybody agreed, and it's very hard. I worked for anybody that would have me. The Elks, the Knights of Columbus, the Hadassah, the anybody that would have me. And...
when you were performing before the Elks and the Hadassah, you weren't doing the Orestes.
For free, yes. Well, each time I learned, don't do the Orestes funeral chant. It doesn't seem to be as thrilling to other people as it is to the Bennington girls. So I learned each time something. And finally, I had to go home with my tail between my legs. And there was a little review called Lendenier. And Gower Champion was directing it. And he had just been married. It was Marge and Gower Champion, you know.
Right.
And Marge Champion, I did an audition for her. And she said, "Gower, you have to see this girl." And Gower said, "Well, I can't. I we're all cast." And Marge Champion said, "I don't care." Well, he was only married to her 3 weeks, so he had to do anything she asked. Later, he did whatever he pleased. But, as all husbands do. But... She said, "Please, sir." He said, "Well, I can give you 3/4 of a minute. I said, "Well, no, my style is that you have to hear the 12 songs before you know what I do." So he said, "Oh, really?" And so I got up on the stage of the Little Las Palmas Theater, and I started out with the first one, a song, and Marge was watching Gower. And when he would start to look at his watch, she said, "Now do Ethel Waters." So I went, "There's a little," and I did Ethel. So then he said, she said, and then she'd watch him, and she said, "Do Gertrude Lawrence, now do Uta Hagen, now do Lynn Fontanne, now do everybody that was on Broadway at the time," was who I did. Everybody. And, of course, that's how you get your muscles flexed, you know? That's the way writers are. First you write in Ernest Hemingway style,
right.
Then you write... And that's the way actors are. You have to... So that when, by the time a thing like... My first starring part came along, I had those muscles at my command. You know, I was ready.
You were ready.
Yes. And suddenly it would require, well, as in Hello, Dolly, it required pieces of Lyndon Baines Johnson in it. And it required pieces of Mary Baker Eddy all of a sudden. And pieces of people. Sophie Tucker is a part of Dolly. My grandmother's a part of Dolly. And I could give her those tones, and they were there for me.
I see.
Biceps were built, you know. That's important. And so I kept doing these songs, and Gower said, finally, I did the 12th song. He said, what else have you got? And I said, I don't have any more. That's all I've got. And he said, then go back to the beginning and start again. And he said, I've got to make room for her. So he did. And they put me in Lendonier, and we were a big hit with the movie colony. All the movie stars, we were kind of a cult thing. And they would invite us home with them at night and all that. We got to know them. And they loved Lendonier. It was a very sophisticated little review. And I got to do 15 different parts. So it was a great showcase for everybody in it. And then it was brought to New York. And we played the Broadhurst Theater. And Anita Loose came to see it. And Oliver Smith. And then they dragged Julie Stein.
Julie Stein also saw you there.
Julie Stein. And Julie saw it, and there was a number called The Gladiola Girl in it. We were the first to dig up the 20s. Now, you spoke of The Gladiola Girl. You must stop me if I'm not letting you get a word in sideways.
Oh, forget about time.
Oh.
Go right on.
Well, I finally got back to your question.
The Gladiola Girl.
The Gladiola Girl.
Okay.
And it was the first time anybody satirized the 20s. And you know, I'm over 6 feet tall in heels. And all the little girls came up to my shoulder, which I'm used to. So these cute little girls were around me. But this was the lost road company of the Gladiola Girl. And we had just turned up tonight, you see.
Uh-huh.
Just tonight. We finally found our way back to this theater tonight. And we've turned up, and we've been gone on the road since the 20s. And I didn't know that I wasn't cute and little and adorable. And so I've grown to be over six feet tall and didn't know it. So I was the littlest, most adorable, the sweetest. And all of them, they were the tough ones. And we were Sulu, Prue, and Boo. We were the chorus. And we stole a whole number of the chorus did. They never looked at the principals. And I was Prue, Prudence. Prudence was my name, and I had a weeny little voice, and I kept trying to do the best I could with all these very complicated steps, and I wasn't too bright, and Anita Loose saw it, and she said, there's my Lorelei.
Well, Julie Stein once told me that when he saw you, he knew that for Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, he wanted the prototype, gorgeous blonde.
Yeah.
But he also wanted a blonde that would be a spoof of blondes. And he picked Carol Channing.
I know he did. Julie stood by me. You know Julie's nature.
Very well.
He's a great, great artist. I mean, he's had 90 hits, these songs. 90, that's what Julie said. Who's written these songs?
Now, Julie, Carol, as you well know, is also very demanding, especially about the way his songs are sung. Now, did you have any problems working with Julie on Gentlemen Prefer Blondes?
He threw himself on the floor in another one of his epileptic fits. He has them twice a day. Threw himself on the floor and said, if you don't get this girl for the part, I quit. And he kept throwing his feet in the air and all that. And he said, Herman Levin, you've got to sign this girl, you know, and all that. Well, and he was going to jump out the window. And we were working every night after Lendonier, after the show. We worked all night long in Julie's apartment. And he said, I can't write it till I hear how it sounds on Carol, you know. And the great Leo Robin was doing the lyrics.
Right.
Can you imagine what a privilege this was for me? These two great men were like Rodin, and I was the thinker. I was the statue they were carving and building, and they would move toward me and say, you're funny when you're grateful. I'm going back home. Sing, I'm a going back home and give my thanks to the one who done me wrong. And it was like this poor... they had a concept of the character that they imbued me with, and then they'd try it and say, no, that's not so funny. Try this. And then we try all night long. The neighbors threw beer bottles down on the... they'd say, shut up. And Julie had backyard, uh-huh. And they'd break the beer bottles on the bricks on the backyard and say, shut up. And then we'd get very quiet. And he'd say, do you think at the end of Diamonds you could hit a high A? And I'd say, well, you mean like... best friend, and they say that's it, and then shut up would come. Well, we were finally evacuated, but we had the best score you could ever. I thought it was the greatest.
Well, let's hear a sample of that. Here's from Gentlemen Prefer Blondes by Julie Stein and Leo Robin. Here's Carol Channing singing. Take it.
Wrong. I feel the room swaying.
That's not. Oh, but that's Hello Dolly. That's what I'm working on now. Oh,
this
Stuart.
Is... Wait, we'll try again.
I'll be in my room alone, every coast meridian, and I'll be with my diary and that book by Mr. Gideon. Bye-bye, baby. Remember, you're my baby when they give you the eye. Although I know that you care, won't you write and declare that low on the news, you are still on the square. I'll be gloomy, but send that rainbow to me then. My shadows will fly, though I'll be gone for a while. I know that I'll be smiling with my baby by and by. Bye-bye, baby. Don't you forget me, baby, when they give you the eye. I'll be there all by myself on those strange boulevards. Just me by myself with your sweet credit cards. When I'm frantic, I'll phone you transatlantic. Then my shadows will fly. My phone bill won't be too large, 'cause I'll reverse the charges. Bye-bye, baby, you're the guy. Though I'll be gone for a while, I know that I'll be smiling with my baby by and by. With my baby, my ever-loving baby.
Carol Channing and Bye Bye Baby from Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. And that selection, by the way, is on Carol's CD called Jazz Baby. Carol, after Gentlemen Prefer Blondes and before Hello Dolly, you took a hiatus from Broadway and went to Vegas, where you became the partner of a young man named George Burns.
Yes.
You were his Gracie Foyle in his Vegas act. How did that work out?
I learned more from George than anywhere else in the world. And do you know, the night we opened with Hello Dolly, which was January 1964, it wasn't the night we opened, it was a week later. I thought, who is in that audience? It's my father, but he's gone, he's dead, you know? And I thought, somebody's there so proud he could just burst. Who could it be? I felt it. You know, you feel an audience, and they sense you, and that's what builds that bridge of communication. And I thought, who could it be? It was George Burns sitting in the audience. And I tell you, he came back and he said, this is the great... One night, Irving Berlin, not one night, Irving Berlin used to come to see Hello, Dolly three times a week in standing room. Two young men were holding him up because he was so old. He was very old.
Standing.
And he would come there and love it. And my husband used to see him in standing room, and he went over to him and he said, would you like to meet Mr. Herman, Jerry Herman, who wrote that? And he said, yes, I would. Well, now, nobody ever saw Irving Berlin. This is Hello, Dolly at the St. James Theater. There was a knock on. He said, he's in Miss Channing's dressing room, which Jerry mostly always was. And he knocked on the door. He opened the door, walked past me, and went straight to Jerry. And he said, young man, you are the future of Broadway.
That's nice.
And wasn't that one? Jerry said he'll never get over it. And he just turned, and the two men had to help him out, and he never said another word. Jerry just cried. He really did. I mean, to have Irving Berlin say that to you, it's like Gracie Allen wanting me to work with her George. Mm. It's a blessing on my head for the rest of my life.
I suppose working with George, you learned a few things about timing, huh, Carol?
Well,
I mean,
I have to tell you that we've rushed from rehearsals, and there were things that George said, that's good, that's not good, that's good, and he's right every time. In Hello, Dolly, do you know who we have for? We've got Leroy Reams as a director.
Right.
And we have, right now we do. This is our world tour. Beijing caused it. We're going to go to Beijing, to Tokyo, to Sydney, to all over the United States, all over Canada. And we're talking about, I mean, people are grabbing it, so it's so wonderful. And we pick up the script, Stuart, after the years that I haven't done it, and it's somehow... It marinated in that time. Dolly is... I am Dolly now.
I take it, Carol, that Dolly Levi is the most satisfying role of your career?
It's just... I think that it's the most wonderful American musical. It's... See, Thornton Wilder wrote those lines. It's hilarious.
Is the show coming to Broadway, Carol? Will it be after the tour? It will.
Yes, it will come. No, first is the tour.
Right.
We start in Denver on... we're here now in the thick of rehearsal. The costumes are brand new, and the scenery's brand new, only more lavish. The costumes, it's bigger, the steps are bigger. In people's memories, the horse cart was enormous. Mm-hmm. The train was the greatest train they ever saw on stage. So we got it bigger, and musicals are more, they're bigger all over the place. So this is very much bigger. My costumes are so beautiful. It's just, I mean, Dolly isn't supposed to look that good. You know, but she does, and this company is an amalgamation of the finest people we've ever had in Dolly. We've got Florence Lacey, who did Evita all over Europe, but she was our Dolly, the one that Jerry Herman really loved. He wrote Mary Ann for her in the Grand Tour. He adores her.
Carol, I don't even think I have to ask this, but... you're going to be touring the world in Hello, Dolly. You're going to be doing 8 performances a week.
And on our day off, we travel.
Good heaven.
Yes.
Now, I mean, I am not making any aspersions of any kind, but you are no longer what we might call a spring chicken. Doing 8 performances a week takes an awful amount of energy. Are you up for this?
You see, my metabolism is set for it, Stuart.
Uh-huh.
I've done it all my life.
Okay.
I've never stopped working. These last 2.5 years, I've been touring with the symphonies, and I've been doing my whole one-woman show of every character I ever did and ever wanted to do and all that. And so I'm... you see, if you're geared for it, it's quite different than if you never did it before. At 8 o'clock every night... If I happen to have a week off, which is rarely, I wake up at 8 o'clock ready to go because it's showtime.
What are you doing tonight?
Exactly, we're rehearsing.
Again?
Oh, sure, we're in the thick of rehearsal. We're right in the thick of it. We've got to work on it. We've got to get this figured out. We've got so long, dear. We've got to get down that ramp and stretch across. I've never stopped. And that's George Byrne says, that's the secret, Carol. Don't ever stop. If you stop, then suddenly you give in and you don't want to, you go back to your bed and you never want to get out.
Okay. You know,
of course, there's another thing. I was raised a Christian Scientist, and they don't believe in birthdays. They just don't. And of course, I thought I was getting killed when I was growing up because I had to get presents for everybody else, and I never got any presents. But now it's my favorite part of the whole religion. And you cannot. Another thing is, you can't tell other people how old you are because they start helping you across the street. You know what I mean?
Well, for heaven's sake, you're in no need of that.
Well, you cannot do this. You can't tell. Other people make laws for you and decide you should be taking it easy. You know all that rot? I mean, they believe that the prime of life is made of plateaus. We learn, we climb, we build. Well, as you can see, I haven't reached the prime of life yet at all. I haven't got it together at all.
You're just a baby.
No.
As a matter of fact, a very old and dear friend of yours, Mr. George Burns, just last week announced his future bookings. George Burns is 98 years old, and he's got a booking in Atlantic City in February.
Yes, and do you know that the privilege of my life, well, I got to bring out his 98th birthday in Las Vegas. George says, I want Carol to wheel out. I wheeled it out, and I got to lead the audience in Happy Birthday, George. And do you know that that was, I've seen every show that I could of George Burns's, and that was his best show on his 98th birthday. The best show I've ever seen him do, because it was all thought. It wasn't energy. He didn't waste his time. As George says, the acrobats are the lowest paid people on the bill. And that's true. It's what are you thinking? What is in your mind? Who is this character you're playing? And all that matters is, how do you communicate what you're thinking? And it comes back to you. And that bridge builds. When my father lectured, he told me that. He said, can you know that you're losing them in the balcony and you're gaining them over here? And he said, yes. And as you build and you gain, it becomes like the San Francisco Golden Gate Bridge, stronger and stronger the communication is, until you can walk over it.
Well, I suspect that the incoming production of Hello, Dolly, starring Carol Channing, will be the best yet. And I know this is the best program we've ever done. Carol Channing, I want to wish you the very best in everything you do from the bottom of my heart.
Stuart Klein, it's a privilege to meet you. You love the theater. You're heralded among actors and theater people. You love the theater. And if you have to say this isn't good, you're amusing about it, or you're gentle about it, or you say here's where they lost the track, but you don't hit or hurt anybody.
Ladies and gentlemen, you just heard that straight from Carol Channing. It's got to be true. Carol Channing, I love you.
Oh, thank you. I love you.
Thanks for joining us on the Broadway.
Thank you,
Carol
Stuart.
Channing, everybody. And we'll be back after this. Has there anything ever been better than Carol Channing? Was she something else or what? Oh, my. Our next guest recently starred at the Oak Room of the Algonquin. She's just completed the national tour of Annie Get Your Gun. Her record albums have been bestsellers, and she'll star on Sunday in the acclaimed Lyrics and Lyricists series at the 92nd Street Y. You will be singing the work of Francesca Blumenthal at the Y program.
Yes.
Tell us a little about Francesca.
Well, Francesca wrote a show that I was in, soon to be off Broadway. It's called Life Is Not Like the Movies.
Uh-huh.
And this great, and Francesca's song, which I'll sing right now, was recorded recently by Cleo Lane.
Uh-huh.
And some of the songs in the program, we have Craig Carnelia, who's been recorded by Andrea Markovici and Michael Feinstein. And we have Babby Green, and we have Michelle Brauerman, who wrote My Favorite Year, as you might have known that song.
Right, right.
Recorded. But there's some great composers. I've been doing lyrics and lyricists a lot for the last few years.
Uh-huh.
I've done Yip Harburg and Jerome Kern and Sammy Fain and Deetson Schwartz. But this is the first time in 24 years that they've presented new writers. And so this is in affiliation with ASCAP. And I'm actually going to be singing some songs that by people who aren't dead. It's amazing.
Well, one of the new songs from the very live Francesca Blumenthal is called The Lies of Handsome Men.
Yes.
Which I can link to.
You can link to, well, Margaret Whiting recorded it too.
Okay.
And she said that the title of the course of the show is Life is Not Like the Movies. So Margaret always says, life is not like the movies. Life is fantasy. Movies are real. I believe in star signs, and I believe in film romances. I believe in fantasy, and I believe with just one glance he's crazy for my eyes, 'cause I believe the lies of handsome men. I believe in witchcraft, and I believe in Cinderella. I believe in gypsies, and I believe I cast a spell that sends him to the skies. For I believe the lies of handsome men. Somewhere in the corner of my mind, I'm not a fool, completely blind. But even though he's hooked me on his line, I find the pleasure's been mine. I believe in love songs. They seem to know just what I'm feeling. I believe Prince Charming. I never guess he's double-dealing. How my spirits rise, believing in the lies of handsome men. Sometimes in a dark and quiet place, I meet the truth face to face. But even if His Highness disappears, I keep some stunning souvenirs. I believe in heroes, and I expect that happy ending, wishing on some rainbow. I pretend he's not pretending. Someday I'll get wise. But right now, I need the lies of handsome men.
Yeah, Katie Sullivan. Katie, it's a delight to have you back on the Broadway Hour. That was lovely.
Thank you.
We'll be back with Emmy winner Kim Zimmer and our trivia contest after this. This is the Broadway Hour here on 93 WPAT, brought to you by the Sheraton New York Hotel and Towers and 777 Film and 777 Food. Here's the Broadway update, brought to you by Taittinger Champagne, the official champagne of the Broadway Hour. With the Tony Awards closing the book on this season, Broadway looks ahead to the fall, and one reason for keen anticipation is Elaine Page, the acclaimed London star of Evita, Cats, Chess, and Anything Goes. She's finally coming over here, arriving on Broadway with her current London hit musical, Piaf. In Broadway's eternal quest of a new musical, here's one potential candidate, a new show called Swing, the big band musical. Using music of the 30s and 40s, the show has a cast of 13, headed by the veteran songbird Margaret Whiting. Swing premieres in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, next month. Pop singer Carol King, who has no acting experience, is now in the lead role of Mrs. Johnstone in the Broadway musical Blood Brothers. If Petula Clark could do it, Carol King could do it. And in another long-running Broadway musical, David Gaines moves into the title role of Phantom of the Opera on July 4th. For those of you who want to take the kids to see Beauty and the Beast, that show, starting in July, will offer two performances on Sunday at 1 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. Possibly not for the kids is the return of the off-Broadway musical comedy Blood Orgy of the Carnival Queens. This epic features severed heads, big hair, and psychotic go-go boys. It starts previews Thursday at the Bank Street Theater. Finally, I suspect for adults only, also is the new comedy The Naked Truth by Paul Rudnick, opening Thursday at the WPA Theater. I will read to you this outline of the play, quote, Alex Del Flavio is a notorious photographer of sexually explicit images. He's about to have his first major uptown retrospective. Nan Bemis, socialite and museum board member, demands that Alex remove three photos from the show. Alex responds by asking Nan to pose naked. I think I'll stop there. Back with Kim Zimmer and trivia after this.
Courtney Pine on Jazz and Champagne.
I started playing the saxophone when I was 14. Of all the instruments, it's the closest to the human voice. And that's why every saxophone player sounds so different. For me, Taittinger is a soprano saxophone of Champagne's. Soprano is a very feminine instrument, very bright and very reaching. You play a note, you add a little bend, and soon you're exploring subtleties you'd never have imagined. I think you need dedication and discipline to do anything really well. The Taittinger family has been making Champagne for generations. You could say I spend my life creating music with the saxophone. They spend theirs creating music in a bottle.
For people who know a good thing when they sip it, Champagne Taittinger. Imported by Cobrand, New York, New York.
It's trivia time, and the winner of this week's contest will win two free tickets to Four Dogs and a Bone and dinner for two at Bistro 790 here at the Sheraton. Here's the question. The name Winnie Leitner may not be on the tip of your tongue, but she introduced one of America's all-time enduring standards by one of Broadway's greatest songwriters in The George White Scandals of 1924. What was the song? Francesca Blumenthal, you know that song? Kim Zimmer? Okay, if you think you know and you want to take a shot at the freebie theater tickets and dinners, send your answer to The Broadway Hour, WPAT, 1396 Broad Street, Clifton, New Jersey, 07013. Get your mail in early. We'll announce the winner on next week's show. Last week's question was, Neil Simon said he became a playwright to get away from the TV star for whom he was writing comedy, a man Simon called, quote, a miserable, rotten SOB. And I've cleaned that up a lot. That same star, one of America's all-time television favorites, later starred in a Broadway musical, and the stage manager of the show, Gene Wolsk, who went on to produce such hits as Forever Plaid, said of the star, quote, he is the single worst person I ever met in my life, and there isn't even a close second. Who was the star? Wait, a man in the audience says he knows. Kim, you know? No? KT? No, it wasn't Sid Caesar. You're wrong? Well, Brian Eskin of North Massapequa, Long Island, knew that the star was Jackie Gleason. Congratulations, Brian. You win two tickets to the musical Stomp and Dinner for Two at Streeter's here at the Sheraton. I might add, Jackie Gleason as a kid was abandoned by alcoholic parents and grew up to be a drunk himself. He was a wonderful performer, but off stage he was apparently a horror. By the way, those quotes from Neil Simon and Gene Wolsk come from the riveting Gleason biography, The Great One, by William Henry III, drama critic of Time magazine. Our next guest is a three-time Emmy winner for her role of Reva Shane in The Guiding Light, and she's now starring as the leading actress in the hit off-Broadway comedy Four Dogs and a Bone. Please welcome the lovely Kim Zimmer. I said we would get to Kim Zimmer. How you doing,
Thank
Kimmy?
You, I'm fine. I'm so excited to be here.
Please forgive me for making you hang around like this, but you know, listening to Carol Channing,
I would be more than happy to give my time to Carol Channing. I mean, it was fabulous. She's an incredible woman.
She is something else.
I mean, just as wonderful in person. Lots of times you get frightened by those people because they're so big.
Yeah.
You know, but she's just so neat.
The other night, at Julie Stein's house, I said, you know, Carol Channing's going to be on the radio show this week. I said, you got any good stories about her? Mm-hmm. He said, Stuart, just say hello.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about anything.
I usually don't have a problem talking either, but she's really good at it. Well, she's got a lifetime of experience, though, too.
Welcome aboard, Kim.
Thank you.
Tell us about Four Dogs and a Bone. Well, what's that that intriguing title refers to?
The four dogs are the four actors that are involved in the show, and The Bone is a movie that's trying to be made. It's about Hollywood and producers, and there's one, Grant Shoud from Murphy Brown is playing the producer.
There's a screenwriter.
Yes,
There is a leading actress, which is you.
Well, no, she thinks she's still an ingenue.
Okay, and then there is a sort of Eve Harrington type little actress who wants to get your part.
Eva Harrington, who's also a bit of an airhead too. I don't know who you've seen play. Have you seen the show?
I got to get down there.
I'm
ashamed
yes.
of myself.
Oh, you must see it. It's great fun. And we've gotten a lot of repeat audience attendees too. They come back and back. We've had some. I had one guy tell me the other day he's seen it three times. It's one of those shows where you either really, really love it or you really, really hate it.
It's funny, right?
It's very funny. It's very funny, but you can also tell, like Carol was talking about, how you can feel your audience. You can tell when there's an audience that's really hip to the L.A. scene and what making a movie is all about, because those are the people that are either really quiet because we're hitting home, or else they're very loud and love it to death.
Now, for many years, you were part of that L.A. scene, taping The Guiding Light.
No, we taped The Guiding Light here in New York.
Were you out in L.A.?
I've just been there. We've lived out there for 4 years. I left Guiding Light in 1990. And moved to California.
Did they do any bizarre thing to write you out of Guiding Light?
I had severe postpartum depression and drove myself off the end of a bridge. Yes. Now, she's been seen, though. She's extremely waterlogged, but she's floating around the coast of Italy somewhere.
Oh, so it wasn't determined that she was killed when she crashed over the cliff?
No. They found the car. They never found the body. So,
did they ever do any other bizarre things during the 7 years you did the Guiding
Light?
Oh,
what are you nuts?
To write you out of the show for a vacation or anything?
Oh, to write me out of the show. And I had two babies on that show, too, and they just wrote in my pregnancies. And I would take, like, you know, little 4-week vacations to have a baby and recuperate for 2 weeks and then come back.
What's better, Kim, working on Broadway or a soap?
Oh, well, there's no comparison. Broadway, I'm off Broadway, but there really isn't any big difference there either. But working on live stage is the best because it's instant. You know whether you're succeeding or failing immediately. It can take you a year before you know about a film.
It's not like life.
You know
right away.
No, and it's like Carol said, too. She had said so many things that just hit home to me. How she said you can feel the audience, and your performance is totally gauged by an audience's reaction, which is wonderfully unique, I think, in this business.
Did you start like Carol?
I was a buffer. I was
third
a singer.
Grade, or
well, no, I was in sixth grade when I did my first show.
Uh-huh.
But I was a hoofer. I started out as a dancer, and I sang in the chorus, and then someone made the mistake of letting me talk. They gave me a script and said, here, read these lines, and I did, and that was it was over. It was just over. I've never stopped talking since.
You've done a lot of musical shows, I think.
Yes, yeah, I have. In fact, I'm leaving Four Dogs and a Bone probably on the 24th of July and going to Michigan to a very old summer stock theater, the Barn Theater in Augusta, Michigan,
uh-huh.
that's run by Jack Ragazzi, and it's a fabulous theater, and I'm going to do Lola and Damn Yankees there.
Oh.
Last summer I did Whorehouse. I played Mona in Whorehouse. And
you like playing shady ladies?
Yeah, I do.
Lola does a nice strip in the locker room.
I said this is going to be Ethel Merman's version of Lola.
Kim, if you had your druthers, is there one role you've always wanted to play that you'd love to do?
Yeah, I'd kind of like to chew on Martha in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. Mm, I'd like to get my hands on that part eventually.
Uh-huh.
I'm still I don't know. I'm borderline age-wise now.
Yeah,
but
I think you could do Martha very well.
I think
well.
I could do Martha.
And good heavens, you'd be much slimmer than Liv Taylor was.
Well, I don't know about that, but I'm catching up with her.
Now,
she
you
looks
said
pretty
you got
good. She looks fabulous in
well, she does now, but you remember when she did Virginia Woolf on film, she was really heavy.
That's true. That's true. Well, you know, the character. Can you blame her?
Yeah.
I mean, who? But it's that's one role, and then there's some other musical. I did Sally Bowles in Cabaret a long time ago when I was in college, and I'd like to try to do that again too.
You must have done a chorus line at some point.
No,
like,
I haven't because I'm really not a dancer. I'm an
you
actress.
You told me you
singer.
Were a hoofer.
I used to be a hoofer, but I've had three
then
kids
you went straight.
In age since then. Yeah.
How do you manage raising three kids and work on the stage and on TV?
Well, with
at the
soap,
same time?
It was easier. They allowed me to bring the kids with me to the studio. I was nursing them, and I didn't have any choice.
Good heaven.
So I brought them. I had someone who watched them at the studio, and they were with me. All of them were with me until they were about 11 months old, and then they got shipped off back home to be with Dad. I have a wonderful husband who's very helpful too.
What's he do, Kim?
He's an actor. His name is A.C. Weary. He's acted for many years, and now he's going with the ultimate power of directing.
Uh-huh.
He enjoys that a lot. But it's been great to be back in New York doing... I said I had to move to L.A. to get an off-Broadway show. I lived here for 13 years and did off-Broadway, but never got to off-Broadway. Now my next step is moving to Europe and coming back with a Broadway show.
Kim, while you were slaving away for 13 years in New York doing off-Broadway... Mm-hmm. Did you have any of those juicy jobs that actors take to pay the rent?
My juicy job, I was very fortunate, Stuart, because I was doing a soap during the day. That was my day job.
A soap?
Yeah, I did The Doctors for 4 years before that went off the air right at Rockefeller Center.
You had a role in The Doctors that every American woman would die for. You played opposite Alec Baldwin.
Yes, I did. I did. I remember when he auditioned for the role. He was found on the street. The casting director saw him outside of New York, NYU, and said, you wouldn't by any chance want to act. And he said, well, I don't know. I'm studying to be a lawyer. He was going to be a lawyer. He wanted to be the next John F. Kennedy, you know. And though they brought him up, he auditioned. And all of the women, of course, were in the green room watching his audition. After he was done, we all ran into the booth where the producers and everybody were. We said, if you don't hire this guy, we're all quitting.
Including
on the spot.
You?
Oh, of course, of course. Now he's like, he's the godfather to one of my children, so. We've become very good friends. He's really good friends with my husband. They play tennis together.
Kim Zimmer, ladies and gentlemen. Kim, it's been a delight to
Thanks,
speak
Stuart.
To you.
Thanks, Stuart. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to The Broadway Hour. I want to thank our sponsors, Sheraton New York Hotel and Towers, Taittinger Champagne, and 777 Foods, 777 Film. Thanks to our guests, Kim Zimmer, K.T. Sullivan, and the amazing Carol Channing. Our producer is Kate McGrath. Our engineer is Chris Breedfeld. This is Stuart Klein for the Broadway Hour. Thanks for listening, and good night, and break a leg.